Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
President Biden's new vaccine mandate, how workers and many of them will be affected, what United Airlines is doing, tech jobs saved at AT&T, and we can thank the CWA. Today on the show, operating engineers remembering 9/11, how stone, sand, and gravel make up our infrastructure, and the new face at the NLRB. Welcome to the Friday, September 10th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have three guests on the show today. Thomas Hart will be joining us. We tried to link up with him yesterday. He had pretty much an emergency. He comes from Local 94 of the International Union of Operating Engineers. We had him on the show a year ago talking about how the operating engineers reacted when 9/11 happened 20 years ago tomorrow. And they were on the ground doing a lot of the cleanup. In fact, Tommy talked to him yesterday. He had, I believe, four members that were in one of the towers that didn't make it out. So he is going to collect his thoughts and talk about that day, a day that really changed America. And it changed it in so many different ways. We didn't have Homeland Security at that time. I mean, think about all the security checkpoints we have all through, not just America, but around the world today due to that. Building construction has changed. So we'll get into all of that. Tom also serves as president of Local 94, 94A, and 94B. He serves as a trustee on the Health and Benefit Trust Funds, Annuity Fund, and Training Fund, and is a Midtown, this is New York City, Midtown area business rep. And if we have a time to talk about infrastructure, we'll get into that. We'll spend a whole lot of time on infrastructure with our second guest, and that would be Mr. Michael Johnson. Mike's been on the show before. He is president of the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association, NSSGA.org. And last month, it was a month ago today, the U.S. Senate passed the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act by a vote of 69 to 30 with the support of all 50 Democrats and 19 Republicans, including Mitch McConnell. That's a switch. And Mike says this is truly a jobs bill. A jobs bill with targeted funding that will be leveraged by state and local partners to help modernize our outdated systems that are dragging our economy down. He says this is the largest federal investment in public transit and access ever, the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the building of the interstate highway system signed off by President Eisenhower in 1956. That's how comprehensive this legislation is. And this is an interesting statistic. I always talk about China and what China is doing and what we're not doing here in this country. Mike points out this bill is a very important step in keeping America competitive with our adversaries. It is estimated that China spent $8 trillion on their infrastructure last year in the middle of a pandemic, while our federal government spent only $146 billion on infrastructure. $8 trillion versus $146 billion. That's way, way, way out of whack. Joyce Goldstein will wrap up the show today. She joined us about 2 years ago, and each and every month we check in with her to see what's going on, especially in the National Labor Relations Board. And I'll tell you, there's been dramatic changes there. Politico did an article on this just last week, and they pointed out that the new Democratic majority on the board is, quote, poised to carry out sweeping policy changes that could dramatically shift the balance of power toward workers and away from employers, including, most notably, increasing the number of workers who qualify as employees instead of independent contractors. That's a big issue. Expanding the scope of protected concerted activity and punishing businesses that interfere with union elections. Hear that, Amazon? And we'll talk about Amazon. A regional director about a month, maybe 6 weeks ago, said the election held in Bessemer, Alabama, should be taken over again. And right now that goes to the national board. Now, Joyce is going to explain that process to us and what may happen there and why there may be another vote there. The other issue is expanded payouts to workers with a new remedy. This is really interesting. The board signaled at the end of August that it's open to adopting a new remedy that would compensate employees for losses beyond wages and benefits, say they get fired from their job. Or maybe you're trying to organize a union at your workplace. You lose your job, and then it takes a long time to get whatever wages you would have garnered during that time to get them back. Well, there's other components to this, because when you lose your job, you lose your health care. You got to maybe go on COBRA. Your credit card goes up. You're not getting a regular paycheck. Maybe you have to draw on your IRA. There's a penalty for that. Well, guess what? With this new labor board, you may be able to recoup all those losses. How about that? Expanded payouts. Lastly, the Joy Silk Doctrine may be revived, according to the general counsel at the NLRB. And essentially, and Joyce will explain what that's all about, it would essentially make it much more costly for employers to commit unfair labor practices during an organizing drive. And you know that happens all the time. So, three issues we're going to get into with Joyce Goldstein, who's been doing labor law for close to 40 years now. All right. Vaccine mandate. Are you ready for this? In his most forceful pandemic actions and words, President Joe Biden on Thursday announced sweeping new federal vaccine requirements affecting as many as 100 million Americans in an all-out effort to increase COVID-19 vaccinations and curb the surging Delta variant. I mean, no bones about it. He looked pretty tough yesterday when he announced this, which was in the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock hour. Speaking at the White House, Biden sharply criticized the roughly 80 million Americans who are not yet vaccinated. "We've been patient," he said, "but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us." The new rule mandates that all employers with more than 100 workers require them to be vaccinated or be tested for the virus each and every week. Now, that affects about 80 million Americans. And the roughly 17 million workers at health facilities that receive federal Medicare or Medicaid will also have to be fully vaccinated. Biden is also signing an executive order to require vaccination for employees of the executive branch, as well as contractors who do business with the federal government, with no option for testing instead. Now, that covers several more million workers. So Biden is flexing his muscle. You know there's going to be some pushback on this, but it turns out that the virus is spreading mainly because 80 million Americans are not vaccinated. And that's what he's trying to stop right now. Let me tell you about United Airlines, what they're doing. They have announced that they plan to force mandatory leave on unvaccinated employees who have medical or religious exemptions, anticipating potential public health concerns as the winter approaches. The company plans to introduce the measures for unpaid personal or medical leave on October 2nd. Now, Not all employees will have their leaves unpaid, since some union members have provisions allowing for paid medical leave. The airline said the policy was designed to protect customer and employee safety given the surge of the Delta variant. It has imposed a September 27th deadline for employees to submit proof of full vaccination. The company sent a memo to employees saying, given our focus on safety and the steep increases in COVID infections, hospitalizations, as well as deaths, even since August 6th, when we announced our vaccine requirement, we can no longer allow unvaccinated people back into the workplace until we better understand how they might interact with our customers and their vaccinated coworkers. Customer-facing roles, such as flight attendants, pilots, and gate agents, will be on extended leave until the pandemic appears to be over, while non-customer-facing roles will be updated in October. How the policy will affect their ability to return, and new social distancing and masking policies are in place. So you're seeing more and more corporations flexing their muscle. AT&T and the Communication Workers of America agreed this week to settle a lawsuit between them, resulting in the preservation of 29,000 landline technical jobs until the end of 2023. This is pretty significant. Not only did the settlement result in job preservation, it also included a commitment by AT&T to hire 6,000 more customer service workers and make Martin Luther King Jr. Day a holiday for all union members. I didn't know it wasn't a holiday until I read this story. The settlement is a victory for the union, whose membership had suffered from cost-cutting and job eliminations by AT&T over the years. AT&T also stands to benefit significantly from its deal to keep workers at the company. It plans to make fiber broadband available in 2.5 million locations this year. The rollout will be greatly aided by the 85,000 unionized employees filling the company's ranks since January. The CWA expressed optimism with the deal, saying, quote, "We are glad we got this settled with AT&T, and we're very interested in getting to work on broadband build out." I'm sure we'll get into more detail on this next Tuesday. That's our segment we do every month with Frank Matthews of the CWA. And I'm sure you can get more at cwa-union.org. Good news. They've been fighting AT&T over the years. AT&T promised, I think, 7,000 jobs for every $1 billion that they saved in taxes when Trump cut their taxes. Instead, they cut jobs. Well, finally, they're adding jobs. And a lot of that has to do with this policy to expand broadband. All right, we have to break. When we come back, Thomas Hart, operating engineer in New York City, remembering what happened 20 years ago tomorrow.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, connecting people with employment, which is a very good thing. And you could check out more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. We tried to reach this guy yesterday, but he was a little bit tied up. Better late than never, I always say. Thomas Hart is his name, and he is president and business rep of the International Union of Operating Engineers. We're talking local 94, 94A, and 94B. I have to ask you, are we working on 94C yet? Is that in the works, Mr. Hart?
We're open to anything out there. We historically stay within our craft and on a trade. So I think we got New York City covered pretty well. But if this does come up, I will let you guys know.
Okay, please do that. By the way, congratulations, 35 years. He just celebrated 35 years as an operating engineer. And there's, would you say there's 6,000 members in your...
We have just about 6,000 members in our jurisdiction, which covers New York City and the five boroughs.
Gotcha.
Manhattan, Queens, Bronx. We're pretty condensed, pretty tight city.
Well, we want to talk about what happened 20 years ago, a day that changed America and changed the entire world. In fact, you lost a couple of your members in the towers. Is that what happened 20 years ago?
Yeah, we had four of our guys perish. Actually, today we're going to be celebrating. We've been celebrating a mass in their honor and all the people that have passed in the last year. We have a mass at 10:30 this morning. On hand will be the widows of the four that perished, as well as any other family members from the guys that perished this last year. To come, and we vowed never to forget, so we continue this, and then we go on to have a traditional lunch with the families and kind of keep their memory alive for the sacrifices that they went through.
Never forget what happened on 9/11. Talk to me about that day, Tom, because the operating engineers had a pretty big role, especially in the cleanup part, right?
Yes. So it's hard to believe that it's 20 years ago tomorrow. It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny day. There was a special election being held here. It was a primary day. So I had shown up in Queens to leaflet and pamphlet support of a labor candidate out there in one of our districts. It's out there, you know, beautiful morning, birds coming up. And then all of a sudden, I had a meeting up in the Bronx, so I had to leave. I get my car. I get a phone call from my boss. It's like, we're heading up to the Bronx. We got to get back real quick. A small plane just hit the Trade Center. Now, from my vantage point, I was driving away from it, but I could see in my rearview mirror that it was no small plane. It was large. And I told him, I said, this is a lot bigger than whatever report you're getting. I said, it's a large hole. It's a large, you know, it's huge. He's all right, get up there. We'll do what we got to do, and then we'll go back downtown. So as I was traveling over to another, you know, it was another burner in New York. I'm going over the bridge. The second plane hit. At that point, we kind of knew things were going to get out of control pretty quickly. We went to the meeting over in Co-op City, which is a power plant that I represent. I got about 60 guys there. And we went into a quick meeting, did what we had to do. And in the middle of the meeting, guys came in. They said, you got to come out here and see this. One of the towers just collapsed. I'm like, no way. Now, I have a degree in engineering, have a background in construction. I'm like, there's no way. And when I went out and I watched the TV and I see it over and over and over, and naturally the reminder's here now with the 20 years, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. We had been around for the first bombing. That was an experience. Talk about that a little bit. But it was just numbing to see the building come down. Never in my wildest dreams did I think it would happen. And then naturally, all you could think about is how many people are going to die. I know how many people we had there. We had over 80 guys working in this, in both towers. And it's just, it was just overwhelming. So with that, we agreed that we were going to get downtown and try and help in any way we can. We got to the George, right at the base of the West Side Highway, and the city was locked down. We couldn't get downtown. I had all the credentials from the Department of Labor, the different health and safety stuff, and the police officer on duty said, absolutely not, nobody's allowed in the city. So we were turned around, we met at a school, we went to one of our schools, and we kind of worked there for a little while, went home. It took about 5.5 hours to get home with traffic. The city was just in total turmoil. We had people that were stuck in the office that spent the night here. We had a lot of guys that weren't accounted for. It was just mass pandemonium. We had all the buildings in the surrounding area. And basically, if you were working downtown, getting out of there was next to impossible. Train service was shut down. Buses were shut down. Any means of transportation was shut down. So we spent the better part of 3 days after that just looking for people. I had received a call at home from one of the widows, Sally DeLeo. She kept asking me where her husband was, and I had no idea. And I told her, I said, Sally, as soon as she called me till well into, you know, at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, Sally, as soon as I have an update, I'll let you know. We never found Vito. That was probably one of the things that changed my outlook on what I do here, because I had to go share with his children, share with his wife, that he, you know, we're not going to find him. And we've had a bond with those four widows, a special bond with those people ever since. So let's jump back into what the guys were doing. Typically what we do in an office building, high-rise office building, we take care of the life safety support systems, the heating, the ventilation, the air conditioning. We're responsible for getting people in and out of the building safely, maintaining their safety. There's countless stories of what guys did that day and the days after. I got to say that, honestly, it was numbing. It was an experience you never want to live through again. But it was also rewarding in the fact that you've seen all of humanity and all good in people. It didn't matter where you were, where you sat, what side of the aisle you sat on, union, non-union, whatever your beliefs were. Everyone came together and they wanted to do something, whatever it was. It didn't matter what it was. You know, everybody pitched in, you know. I can remember being down there the next morning. Landed right on West Street, where the collapse of the bridge and the tower came down on all the fire apparatus, the firemen that were there. I had gotten a ride down from, I was over at Bellevue Hospital looking for the four guys that we couldn't find and some other guys that we couldn't find. Found someone in the hospital, the other four guys we never found, but I got a ride down with ESU, Emergency Service Division of the Police Department, and they dropped me off right in the middle of, you know, the complete turmoil. I got out of the truck and I went over to the captain of the fire department that was there and said, this is who I am. I said, we have men here that know every inch of this building. So, you know, I'm going to let you do your thing, but I'm here. And what had happened, that's where most of the firemen, a lot of firemen perished. So we spent all day basically cleaning up and looking for survivors, and we never found one survivor. We spent many days down there doing the same thing, and it was just, people came from all over. And that night when I left, they were just, you know, you had enough emotionally, you were drained, and coming down the West Side Highway were just, you know, loads and loads of equipment from all over, whether they were light towers, Bobcats, whatever it was. They were just, it was just a caravan of supplies and things that we needed. And that was the first day. That was really no coordination, no anything. people just came from all over. And I remember heading up to Penn Station. I jumped in a dump truck with a guy to get out of there covered in all kinds of crap. And he's like, where are you going? I said, I got to get up to 34th Street. He says, no problem. Come on in. I'll drive you up. And the people around, it was twilight. It was just getting dark out. And people were on the street corners with signs and clapping and candles. And they just turned out to be a part of whatever they could do. And it was really, as sad of a time as it was a beautiful thing to see New Yorkers come together. And then it came from across the world, the globe. I did a lot of work with the Red Cross, coordinating efforts of stuff coming in and out. Just the sea of humanity stuff that came in. You know, I'm so proud of the membership of our local. We've been tested time and time again on different things. Recently, the pandemic, we had Hurricane Sandy, which destroyed a lot of Manhattan. Really far-reaching destruction. We've had blackouts, we've had fires, we've had floods. And the men and women of Local 94 answer the bell every day. They come to work. Recently in the pandemic, you know, nobody was coming to work. Our guys were here to make sure the buildings were open and operating so that business could go on as usual. And I can't say enough of how proud I am to represent these men and women who really come to work every day and do what they need to do. They understand their role in the New York economy and the global economy, and we're here to do it. And I'm happy to say that, you know, I have the privilege of representing them.
I don't know what else to say. You covered it all. It's a tough one to remember. I'm glad you're here to talk about it. There's many that can't, and we remember them in our prayers. You're going to Mass today, so all I can say is stay strong, my brother.
Yeah. What I would say is take a moment to reflect today, not only for 9/11, but and tomorrow. Today in this world, this crazy world with the pandemic, many people are divided on their views and where they stand and vaccine, no vaccine. Remember what makes America great. America is great when we work together and we stand together, not divided on stupid principles. When things get tough in this country, people stand up. And we're in a real difficult time now. And you have to put your beliefs and your trust in someone. We have to come back to the middle of the aisle, and we have to look out for the good of everybody, not just certain groups and certain individuals. That's the only way we're going to get back to the greatness that we have and that we've had over the years. So I'd encourage everybody just to take a moment, reflect, and let's put this thing back together and remember those that perished 20 years ago tomorrow.
Thomas Hart, President, Business Rep of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 94, 94, 94A, and 94B. You take care, stay safe. I'm going to let you go to Mass, and
thank you.
And we'll keep in touch, okay?
Thank you, brother. Be safe, everybody.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Michael Johnson is with the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association. He's coming up next on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day, he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go to line number 2 right now. Michael Johnson is head of the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association. And when you mix all that together, you're talking infrastructure. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about on the show today, because we need to improve our infrastructure. I can't tell you how many shows we've done on this topic. It's so darn important. And the needle seems to be moving in the right direction. Michael Johnson, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Flash, it is great to be with you.
I have to point out, too, Mike wasn't always in the field of stone and gravel. He used to be with the National Beer Wholesalers Association and vice president of government affairs with the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America. That's an interesting switch, my man, from beer and wine to gravel. How did that happen?
Well, yeah, I got to just say, I went from on the rocks to in the rocks. It's definitely different, and people aren't looking for the same number of samples. I just can't get them as interested in free rock as I can free beer.
Understood. All right, talk to me about this bipartisan deal. Thank you for all the prep that you send me, and this is pretty comprehensive. I knew it was big, didn't realize it's the biggest, especially when it comes to transit, since Eisenhower was in office. It's pretty amazing. So you're in the middle of things there. You work right in Washington. I'm sure you had a role in making all of this happen, right?
Well, I tell you what, we're part of the Americans for Transportation Mobility, a coalition of business and union groups who have come together to say that investment in infrastructure in the United States is way overdue. You just said it. We haven't made significant investment in infrastructure in the U.S. since Eisenhower was president, when we were coming out of World War II. You know, we are way overdue, and we're falling way behind the rest of the world. The Chinese, for instance, the Chinese are using infrastructure as a way to try to challenge us on the world stage. They very much want to be what we are. They want to be the number one economy in the world. They spent $8 trillion on infrastructure in 2020. They see it as their way to be in the number one economy in the world. We're just talking about a bill now that's $1.2 trillion. We desperately need it, and it is a huge bipartisan step in the right direction. But we've got a lot of work to do to make sure that our infrastructure can make sure that our economy can continue to compete the way we need to.
And Mike, when China's spending $8 trillion, and this was just last year, $8 trillion, we spent only $146 billion on our infrastructure. I mean, that's way out of whack. Now, it is a bigger country. I guess they got a lot of ground to cover over in China and all that. But that being said, they are still preparing for the future, and it seems like we're sleeping at the wheel here. Well, let's talk about this deal. You mentioned it's just over $1 trillion. Many are saying that this is kind of a down payment on our infrastructure. Do you agree with that?
Well, the Society of Civil Engineers, and who better to listen to on this subject than the folks who are charged with designing and maintaining our network of infrastructure? The Society of Civil Engineers says we need upwards of $3 trillion to bring our infrastructure from a C to a B, or maybe even an A minus. That means getting from current needs to starting to put some things in place to anticipate future needs, future growth, the amount of heavy trucks that are going to continue to grow in number on the road, the amount of cars that are going to continue to grow in number on the road, the needs for high-speed rail, all of those things. We need more than $3 trillion to get where we need to be. But you got to take the incremental victories, and $1.2 trillion with $550 billion in new spending is a huge step in the right direction from the kick the can down the road kind of extensions and short-term funding that we've seen far too often over the last number of years.
It's my understanding, too, that they're trying to get this done by the end of this month. What do we know about that right now?
They really need to get it done by the end of the month. And frankly, the bottom line is, and some of my friends in Congress don't like it when I say this, but Congress works best when up against a deadline between the proverbial and, in my world, the rock and the hard place. At the end of September, September 30th, the funding for the federal transfer of dollars to the states for infrastructure maintenance expires. If Congress doesn't act, no more money will go to the states to even fill potholes, much less work on important infrastructure projects that are designed to grow our economy and move our people more efficiently. So they've got this deadline in front of them. And when Congress has no option left that is less painful or allows them to defer, that's when they tend to do their best work. And so we think this month's very important. September 30th is very important. You can't allow the infrastructure funding pipeline to break down.
Now, it passed in the Senate. Overwhelming support, too. The vote was, what, 69 to 30? All 50 Democrats, 19 Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, who usually doesn't vote for anything progressive in America. That's pretty significant in itself. But it's in the House. Now, what's going on in the House? Is there any problems to your knowledge? What's the story there?
You're absolutely right. 69 votes in the Senate, including Senator McConnell. I mean, it's hard to get 69 votes in the Senate to say that you know, the week has 7 days in it, much less for anything meaningful that makes significant investment in our infrastructure or anything else we need in this country. Remarkable achievement. That just tells you how well done the bipartisan process was that put this bill together. You're right. Now we're in the House. And in the House, things are progressing, but they're progressing as they typically do in the House, a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is the Democrats who have the majority in the House are trying to figure out how to advance this bill when they're also talking about how to advance a much larger $3.5 trillion package that the president has proposed with not the kind of things we're talking about in this bill. This bill is fully paid for, and it focuses on traditional infrastructure, roads, bridges, ports, rail, all the things that keep our economy and our people moving. That's what's in the bill that passed the Senate with 69 votes. Mm-hmm. The $3.5 trillion, much more controversial for a number of reasons. It's a bill that's going to pass on party line votes if it passes at all. So the negotiation about how to move the two, how to keep the progressives in the House and the moderates in the House Democratic Caucus aligned to get this done, is taking more time. And that's where your listeners are very important. We need, you and I need, all of your listeners need, to make sure we let our members of Congress know that the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill is too important to get bogged down in these politics. We must get it done for our country, for our future. We must get it done by September 30th.
And Mike, I understand if nothing is done, we're still paying for it. Maybe you could run down some numbers here on, like, commute times, people stuck in traffic, there's breakdowns because roads are in bad condition. That all adds up for the typical commuter, right?
It absolutely adds up. Whether you're talking about time lost in productivity in our commercial sector or time lost in family productivity, family togetherness, due to time stuck on the road, not moving forward but sitting in traffic. You know, it's awfully tough to move goods and services efficiently through this country. There are parts of the country in our more congested urban areas where it takes hours to get through an intersection. You multiply that times several intersections or several interstate highway where they come together, and you're talking about significant slowdowns that add cost to the goods and services we need for everyday quality of life. Couple that with the fact that, man, it's awfully tough. I got two kids in Northern Virginia. And to move them from school to where they need to be for their after-school activities and back home often means that we don't get to eat dinner together, or they're eating awfully late and some of us are eating awfully early. And it's very tough to keep the family together and doing the things we want to do when we're spending so much time stuck in traffic. And the wear and tear. You know, I had a tire blow recently on an interstate in the United States on a trip. And, man, if you haven't had that, that's a scary experience. But hitting these potholes, doing real damage to the suspension, to the tires, to our vehicles. The cost is, frankly, something that's embarrassing. You go to other parts of the world, the infrastructure is much better because they've invested the way they should in that quality of infrastructure, the quality of life of their people, the cost of goods and services. It all reflects that investment.
Well, I'm looking at the numbers here just in the state of Ohio, and this is average. Each driver pays $506 per year in costs due to driving on roads in need of repair. I mean, 10 years, you're talking $5,000, and that's average. There's some that are more. There's some that are less. I got one more question here for you, Mike. You're aware of the supply chain problems in America. I'm hearing it all over the place. I'm just wondering, say, perfect scenario here. They get together in the House and the Senate, and they agree on this $1.2 trillion package. Are we ready to rock and roll with all of this, or is that going to be held up because of, you know, the pandemic has changed so many problems, so many issues here with the supply chain? What's your thoughts on that? What's your answer to that?
Flash, we're going to have a lot of work to do, and we're going to have to get to work right away. The good news is the capacity is there. The raw materials exist in the aggregate sector, which I represent. The people are there. The workers are out there. They're looking for the work. They're looking for jobs. And these are good paying jobs that give people a real high quality living. And you know, we are ready to go. Our industry is ready to go. The construction industry is ready to go. The union workers of this country are ready to go to get this done. We need Congress to do its job. If they will just do their job and get the funding in place, the American people are ready to do their job to make sure that these projects occur. You know, there is a ramp-up time from the time that this bill passes to the time that you'll actually see projects start, shovels turn, material be needed. So there is a ramp-up that allows us to get that production going so that we can meet the need. But again, let me say it again. The American people are ready to do this work. Congress needs to do its work and get it going. We need to invest in our infrastructure. We need to invest in our country. We need to invest in our people.
All right, I'm ready. I hope it all happens in the next couple of weeks here. Michael Johnson, president of the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association. You can find more at nssga.org, nssga.org. Mike, hang in there. Keep the faith. When this is all done, let's talk again. How's that sound?
Flash, it sounds great. Love to do it. When it gets done, let's do this. Let's get together and let's have one of those adult beverages that I used to represent, because it'll be easier to travel to meet each other to do that once we really invest in our infrastructure.
Sounds good. I definitely will take you up on that. Mike Johnson, president of the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association. We have to take a quick break. Joyce Goldstein talking about labor law. She's next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. Speaking of teachers, I always learn something new when I talk to our next guest, and that would be Joyce Goldstein of Joyce Goldstein and Associates. We joined with Joyce on the show a couple of years back to talk about labor law changes in the National Labor Relations Board, and I tell you, there have been many. Joyce, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
Last time you were on the air, we ran out of time because there's so much to talk about, and we were going to get into Amazon. Why don't you tell us what's going on? Because they had the union election there in Bessemer, Alabama, and apparently, what was it, a regional director said there were some improprieties and they might have to do the election over. What's the story on that, Joyce?
So there was a representation election that was held during the pandemic by mail ballot, and the tally was announced in April 9th. The union lost by a pretty big margin. Their vote was 1,798 against the union and 738 for the union. So the union lost by over 1,000 votes. But there were over 2,000 employees there who were eligible to vote who didn't vote. So that was a pretty big number that obviously, if those people had voted, it could have affected the outcome. And what had happened there was the union, after losing, filed objections to the election. And, well, before that, too, they had filed unfair labor practice charges. But they filed objections to the election, raising a number of issues. And the one that really caught the attention of the region, and the one why there was a recommendation, as you said, to set aside the election, had to do with the post office drop box that was used in the election. Because, as I said, it was a mail ballot election, and Amazon requested the U.S. Postal Service to install a drop box, you know, like the kind that you see in apartment complexes, to put one of those in front of the facility, like it was about 50 feet from the main entrance. And so that was where employees were encouraged to deposit their voted ballots. And the union objected, saying that it really interfered with the election because Amazon was surveilling the employees who were voting. It also demonstrated that Amazon was a pretty powerful employer, because how many of us could just, you know, call the Postal Service and say, hey, we'd like a drop box in our front yard. And so there were a lot of issues in connection with the installation and of the post of that box and Amazon's behavior in connection with it. So there was a hearing held on the union's objections, and the hearing officer from the region of the NLRB agreed with some of the union's objections, not with all, but certainly with this one about the box, and recommended that the election be set aside and rerun. And that we're waiting still for an actual official order about that. But typically when hearing officers, who are the ones who do the evidentiary hearings and hear from the witnesses and hear all the facts, usually the hearing officer's recommendations are accepted. So I expect that there will be a new election at Amazon, and we'll see whether any of those 2,000 people who didn't vote before may vote if the circumstances are different.
Union election 2.0, I guess, maybe right around the corner. Interesting. Joyce, there's another issue here, and apparently this happened at the end of August. The labor board signaled that it's open to adopting a new remedy that would compensate employees for losses beyond wages and benefits, especially, say, they lost their job. Maybe they were doing an organizing drive and they were fired. What's at play here? When they say new remedy, what are we talking about?
Well, I guess there are a few things that are at play there. So basically, the way that the NLRA is structured is the remedies that are available if an employer violates the law are not intended to be punitive. They're intended to restore the balance. And so there are no fines or punitive damages or that sort of thing against employers. The question, though, is what does it really take to make employees whole when they've been the victim of unfair labor practices? And the NLRB has taken a pretty crimped or narrow view historically about making employees whole. And it's been limited mostly to back pay. So your example, if an employee gets fired during a union organizing campaign or any other time because of the exercise of protected rights under the labor law, that employee is entitled to get back pay. But, if in the meantime the employee found another job, that would limit the back pay. And if the employee doesn't try to get another job, that would limit the back pay. But the remedies are always limited, have been only limited to back pay. And even those have been, as I say, kind of narrowed over time. What's happening now, which is exciting because it doesn't involve any change in the law, like passing the PRO Act, but it still is under the existing law. And that is the board wants to take a look at having consequential damages. So expanding the back pay that otherwise employees get. And this was, as you say, this is a new issue. It's been around, but it's newly in the crosshairs. The board itself mentioned it in a footnote in a decision in August, and the general counsel followed up this week saying that she's looking for appropriate cases to raise the issue. So it is teed up. And really what they're talking about with consequential damages, which would be an expansion of the existing remedies, is let's say an employee lost their job, to your point, and they don't have an income. How about they have credit card fees, late fees that they are experiencing because they don't have an income? Or maybe because they don't have an income, they had to withdraw their pension benefits early, and there would be penalties that they might have suffered as a result of that. Or maybe their car was repossessed, and then they've got consequential damages because of that. Or maybe because they didn't have an income, their home was foreclosed and they lost equity in the home. So these are all things that would flow from the fact of somebody losing their job whether they lost a job wrongfully or not. These are all the kinds of damages one could suffer if they're out of work. But what the board is saying is that if the cause for why they're out of work is an employer's unfair labor practice, then we should take a look at trying to make those workers whole by not just giving them back pay, but looking at these other kinds of consequential damages that have been suffered by employees at the hands of a wrongdoing employer.
So we should point out that the NLRB is open to adopting this. Nothing has happened yet, but they're really looking into it. And anybody that loses their job, they know. I mean, the walls come tumbling down. There's a lot of issues at play, a lot of expenses, and there's a possibility some of those could be recouped. All good stuff there. All right, Joyce, we have to button it up. Joyce Goldstein and Associates. Website is joycegoldsteinlaw.com, joycegoldsteinlaw.com. Phone number is 216-771-6633. You take care, and I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about next month, okay?
Thanks, Flash. Be well.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the electrical workers' fight at Comcast finally resolved, and the New York, New Jersey pier truckers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.